The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, This evening, we're having an important discussion about pain. Dr. Mel Paul's new book, A Day Without Pain. And Dr. Paul suggests that there are natural things that we can do to get out of pain. And boy, this is an important discussion. Good evening, Dr. Paul.
Good evening. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you. I mean, it's... I don't know if there's an average person who's in chronic pain, but for somebody who's in pain, the idea of not having to use narcotics in order to be pain-free sounds a little optimistic.
Well, it is a little optimistic, but you should know that pessimists may have a better view of life, but optimists live longer. So what does it cost us? And actually, in all seriousness, there are study after study after study that says people who believe that the kind of interventions that we're going to talk about this evening work do much better. And it's not simply, sort of fabricating the reality. It is the power of the mind. I mean, the mind can do almost anything. And I can tell you case after case of people who have been on very high-dose pain medications, thought that's the way their life had to be, and they ended up off the medications with less pain and a life. And again, that's not to say everybody needs to do this or will benefit from coming off opioids, but so many of the people that I see are just, their life is spiraling downward with these medications, and I'm here to tell you, life can be much better.
Well, for a matter of fact, I know of which you speak, and one of the things that I've noticed from people that I know who are in that situation is that they end up kind of being criminalized because over a long period of time they need these drugs and they can't go without them because of the chronic pain, and the doctors call them addicts, which in fact they are, because they can't, you know, it's just this cycle of insanity.
Yeah. Well, you raise a lot of really key points. You know, what is addiction? And the definition of addiction is evolving, and whether or not somebody who has chronic pain goes to the physician, takes medication as prescribed, escalates the dose because the prescribed dose stops working, ends up physically dependent, that means they can't stop without withdrawal. I mean, is that true addiction? Not by definition. You have to add other symptoms like continued use despite consequences. We see a lot of people who keep using their drugs because of the pain, but their life gets worse. And is that addiction? Some would say definitely not. I don't debate that point with my patients. What I do is I really ask them if their life is going well, that is, if the medication makes them better, not just relieving pain for a little bit and putting them to sleep, but really gives them a quality of life, gives them value in their life. If that's the case, then medication ought to be continued. That's not drug addiction. But so many people inadvertently end up hooked to these drugs with a terrible, terrible, terrible life, and they don't see any other way to do it. And, you know, I've seen the alternative way work very well.
Why is chronic pain so prevalent and such a problem today?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, our population is aging. You know, our bodies just don't hold up under the stress and duress of our activity. You know, we weren't meant to walk upright, of course. From an evolutionary standpoint, we were on all fours, so our spine is probably the weakest part of our bodies. We drive cars probably too fast. You know, we ski and we have activities that cause injuries, and we live in an extraordinarily stressful environment. It's getting probably worse with our economic situation, and stress really causes sort of an overdrive effect on this area of the brain where we end up perceiving pain. And sort of the ultimate of stress is trauma, and people who are traumatized end up having more pain. So the net effect is, on every level, where our bodies, our minds, and our souls are assaulted by the way in which we live life, and the natural consequence is we feel pain. I mean, the other thing is, nobody gets through life pain-free. Pain is a natural part of the occurrence of our lives.
We're talking about pain, chronic pain, this evening on Health Notes, Dr. Mel Paul's new book, A Day Without Pain. When we're talking about the pain, is there a cycle of suffering?
When we talk about pain, pain is an experience that includes a sensory phenomenon, which is aching, burning, toothache, sharp, numbness even, or tingling. But the vast majority of what I see people experience with chronic pain is the emotional aspect of it, and that's really what you might call suffering. So it's, you know, my body hurts, I'm frustrated because it hurts, I can't do the things I used to do, I'm not the person I used to be, I get depressed, I'm worried, I'm afraid that it's going to get worse, I don't really want to take these medicines, but I don't have any other way out. My life gets worse. I'm more alienated from the world, and you know, down we go, until the person really loses track of who they are, of their identity.
Very familiar. Very familiar.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's. I think it's the way we in the West live life, which is we want and we, you know, we look to achieve and. We can't have everything that we want. You know, we don't have invincible bodies. So we end up hurting, and in the face of hurting, you can do one of two things. You can really embrace, accept, deal with whatever it is that's adverse, or you can fight against it. And I think in my experience, fighting against pain actually makes it worse.
You know, I am a massage therapist, and
Well,
absolutely. As I'm working on a muscle, and as soon as they resist what's going on because it hurts, then the pain gets more intense. And so, as you talk about in your book, what I encourage them to do is to go into the pain, to breathe into it, and it's pretty amazing how fast it dissipates.
Yes, instantly. And that's really one of the things about chronic pain. If you look at pain as an overall state of being, it could be pretty discouraging. But you and I know that there's no permanence to it. It really changes from breath to breath. And with a breath, regardless of what physical condition you have, you can modify your experience of pain. I mean, I do it personally, and I see patients do it all the time. The neat part about it is if you try doing it, I mean, you know, just take a deep breath and see what happens to you is what I encourage patients to do. And they're really quite amazed at how from breath to breath there's a difference of the experience.
Can you talk about our connectedness or maybe lack of connectedness with our bodies and where that fits into this whole pain cycle?
I actually think it all starts in our minds. I think as a culture, we are not mindful. You know, there's a new sort of movement in healthcare to pay attention to the thoughts and the emotions that come up and then to deal with them and work on modifying them. But I really think that there is a disconnect between who I am as a human being, as an individual, and how I act. So you know, sometimes we just sort of move through the world with vigor and purpose, and we miss what's going on. So the real key for chronic pain treatment with mindfulness is to just notice what's really there. Oh, my knee is really killing me. Okay, well, what's that about? You know, what happens when I take a deep breath? And we actually, at Las Vegas Recovery Center, where I'm the medical director, we actually treat people's pain with a process called body scan, which is a 20 to 40 minute meditative practice that we do every day with our patients to really allow them to just experience their body, to get back in touch with that connection between what I think and feel about my body and what's really going on.
It's pretty interesting to me, Doctor, how the idea that I can breathe, that I can change my mind, that I can accept the pain, and that something will, that I actually have the power within myself to turn this around seems counterintuitive to everything that we've been taught.
Well, I don't, I mean, I think our way is to achieve and to man up, if you will. And I often see people who have what I call, and what's called in the literature, central pain syndrome or central sensitization, conditions like chronic headaches or fibromyalgia or even irritable bowel syndrome or interstitial cystitis. These are conditions that are very highly misunderstood by medical science and certainly by society, because you can't see anything wrong, and yet people really suffer high-level symptoms. You know, what we're told is, oh, just be tough, you know, and that's the opposite of what really works for this. It really is to say, yes, I you know, it hurts, but now what do I want to do about it? You know, not to become overwhelmed, and as you say, not to resist and actually tense the muscles and make it worse, but actually allow what's there to be there. And I think culturally we're not trained to do that in the West.
I'm just amazed at, as we connect to our bodies, as we connect to whatever's going on in there, how lack of attention seems to increase it. As we give attention to something, as we accept it, it's just amazing to me how it changes what it is.
Yeah, and let me back up and say that everything that we're talking about has a neurophysiologic basis to it. You know, so often we demean the emotional aspect of pain, and you're telling me it's all in my head, And I love that line, because where else do you think it is? You know, you don't have tissue damage with fibromyalgia. You're hurt because your brain is perceiving pain in a heightened way. So to work only on the body simply doesn't make sense. And to really sort of change the messages that we internalize as individuals, you know, that we've been just taught all the way through our childhood. And again, I think this is a Western phenomenon more than it is in cultures that are more attached to meditative practice and acceptance and not sort of fighting against. And, you know, we're also a society that treats with drugs. You know, that's our mainstay is, I have a symptom, fix it with a drug.
And somebody will say, well, what's the matter with that?
It depends. If the medication is appropriate and it works, as I said at the beginning of the show, if it makes my life better, that means makes me ambulatory, makes me, you know, able to get up and go to the soccer game with the kids, makes me able to go to work or take care of the household, whatever it is that is of value to me, if medication allows me to do that, there's nothing wrong with it. It's that's what medication is for. So often, however, I see people who get medicated, who have prescriptions, who rely on the prescriptions for simply just survive, you know, scraping by, and they're in bed 15 to 20 hours out of the day because they don't have the energy, and the pain really doesn't respond to the drugs after all. In fact, we see people who are actually on high doses of morphine or methadone or other opiate medications, and their pain's worse on the drug than it is off the drug. There's actually a phenomenon in the body where the body creates more pain in response to having this suppressive drug in the system for a long time.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cloudland Theatre, presenting Art Brut, Thursday, April 16th. English indie post-punk rockers Art Brut take to the Cloudland Theatre stage to perform their breakout album, Bang Bang Rock and Roll, plus more. They're touring on a retrospective release of their 20-year career, plus a new EP with Scottish rockers Biff. Opening the show are Christy Costello and the CC Club. More information about Art Brut live at the Cloudland Theatre is available at cloudland.com.
We're talking about pain this evening on Health Notes, A Day Without Pain. Dr. Mel Paul's new incredible book. I'm wondering, Doctor, if there are certain kinds of pain that are more responsive to what to the kinds of things than we've been that we've been talking about than others?
Really, no. All pain is real, and there's a component. I mean, if you think about the body, let's say the pain is in the back, you know, because there's pressure on the nerve. That nerve needs treatment, and that back condition needs treatment, and their exercise will be helpful in strengthening the muscles that are around the nerve. But the signal goes up into the central nervous system, into the brain, and that processing center affects every kind of chronic pain. Now, I should differentiate acute pain, which is you break your bone, or you have a surgical scar, or you have an infection that needs to be drained. That's time-limited, ends when the tissue damage ends. We're talking about a different form of pain, which is chronic pain. That is the one that starts and is unending because of a damage to tissue or change in the brain. And all chronic pain responds to those measures that we've been talking about, because all chronic pain is affected by that perception center, which is central nerve. You know, I'm sort of pointing between my eyes to the middle of my brain, and the middle of our brain is intimately linked with the limbic system. The limbic system is where emotion is perceived. So all chronic pain responds to emotional interventions, every single type.
Would that include nerve pain as well?
Yes. Now, nerve pain could be from cutting the nerve, amputation, or it could be from diabetes, where there's inflammation of the nerves and eventually deterioration of the nerves, or AIDS, HIV, or chemotherapy. I mean, there's a lot of things that damage nerves, or sciatica, you know, which is pressure of the nerve from a disc or a bony prominence. But again, that's part of that process is in the nerve, which travels up the spinal column. But no pain is perceived without the participation of the brain. Now, some pains are harder to deal with than others, and some people have a harder time dealing with it. But there is always, with chronic pain, not acute pain, but with chronic pain, there is always a substantial component of the pain that is made worse because of emotional responses. That's 100% of the time.
I'm wondering about the differences in handling pain between men and women.
Oh, it's a good question. Women, we've studied it somewhat. It's hard to control for all the variables, but it appears that women have a lower threshold to feel pain. So that means touching might cause more pain in a woman than a man. However, women are able to sustain pain much longer. So, you know, men might have lower threshold, but once we feel it, we want it gone quick, as opposed to women. And, you know, if you think about how that developed, certainly childbearing is a process that doesn't end pretty quick. So though women might perceive pain more readily, they are able to sustain protracted pain in a much more effective way.
I was thinking about what you said earlier in terms of medication. If anything is wrong, our immediate response is to go for the aspirin or the Tylenol or the muscle relaxant, etc. Can we change our programming from going to the over-the-counter or prescription drugs to breathing, for example, or meditation? Can that inevitably do the same thing?
I mean, when you say can we, I think each individual is capable of utilizing meditative practice and the breath. Just as a simple example of one of the interventions that we might recommend, there isn't anybody who can't do that. And part of the success of those processes is believing that they're really going to work. I mean, and even though we have some people who are pretty macho folks who've been, you know, Army Ranger and a you know, former police officer or firefighter, and even they are amazed at some of the progress they make. So even if you have skeptical, the process works. It works better when there's an internalized belief. that it's going to work. And I would say, hands down, anybody can retrain their brain. We actually have data. In 1 hour meditation training, in a group of people who never meditated before, who then got pain stimuli, electric shock or a filament dragged upon their skin, their pain scores reduced like 60% after the meditation training. Now, that's with one episode of acute pain, so you know, you have to sort of interpolate that and say, well, what would it be like if you trained? And you have to train. I mean, you know, meditation is not, you know, I take a couple of breaths, it didn't work, so it's not working. You know, meditation is spending some time, even if it starts with a few minutes a day, of just really, looking in, breathing in, slowing down. And probably optimal time for meditation is 20 or 30 minutes a day. I would defy anyone to spend that kind of time and not notice a difference in their pain. I should qualify and say, mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they'll be free of pain. It'll mean the experience of pain will be different and more tolerable, and their life will be better. You know, a lot of our people, we track pain scores and mood and activity, and it's not... I mean, most of our people have substantial pain improvement, but I've seen people who have the same level of pain, but their mood gets better and their activity gets better. And those people are okay. They're often and moving. And then over time, with continued application, they tend to notice pain reduction.
A Day Without Pain is Dr. Mel Paul's new book. And that's what we're talking about this evening on Health Notes. We're talking about taking our own power back and the power of our brain. I know that when people are in chronic pain and it's been going on for a long period of time, that it really changes the brain. So I don't know if that means that the brain is programmed to pain or whatever, but I'm just wondering, what is the effect of chronic pain on the brain, and how long does it take to begin that healing process? I guess I'm presuming that the chronic pain kind of wounds the brain in some way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, what happens is that, think about a source of pain, and again, let's take disc disease with a bulging disc pressing on a nerve. The body thinks it needs that pain. And we need acute pain. We need to protect ourselves. That's why pain exists. But we really don't need. I mean, I have a bulging disc in my back. Doesn't serve any function. Doesn't help me. But that signal goes 24/7, and as a result of chronically firing, the efficiency of the nervous system enhances. So I have. If you picture a single lane highway going from my back to my brain, I now have a 2-lane or a 3-lane highway that's more efficiently transmitting the message. And that causes, you know, that constant reporting to my nervous system that something's wrong changes the way that message is perceived in my brain. There's also a decreased ability to naturally inhibit pain. So there's a way in which our body takes away pain that's, you could say, is, quote, unnecessary. That's impaired by this chronic pain signal. So there's a biochemical basis to changes in the nervous system and particularly in the brain as the signal is lodged. It's called the plasticity of the brain. The brain is plastic, it changes. But having said that, with every breath and with every meditative practice, the brain neurons, the nerve cells, are capable of budding out and creating new connections. And that's what the practices that we've been talking about really engage, is the brain's ability, the brain's plastic ability to change in a more positive fashion.
Mm-mm. When people are in pain, they generally don't want to move their bodies.
Yeah.
Why is movement important?
First, I'll say that people really become phobic of movement because it hurts to move. But if you think about what happens if you don't move, there's not blood circulation, and after a while, the tissue sort of freezes, and you can't move. And if you can't move, your function is diminished. You can't, let's say it's a shoulder, you can't put your shirt on normally. So you need to get help. And if you need to get help to put your shirt on, then you feel really bad about yourself. And the worse you feel about yourself, the more isolated you become, because you certainly don't want to go out and, you know, have this disability. And you end up driving that pain train and, you know, causing the spiral to go higher. Movement reverses that process. So by exercise, and anybody who exercises knows this, it doesn't feel good unless you're sort of a freak. Mm-hmm. And there are people who love to exercise. I'm not one of them. But I go and exercise my sore muscles, and I stretch. I mean, the way you work with in massage. And as a result of it, the circulation enhances, movement increases, and I end up feeling better about myself. And that net effect, diminishing fear and increasing movement, blood circulation, and function, overall improves the quality of life, and that diminishes pain.
Hmm.
You know, the move it or lose it is the sort of short version of that.
I was going to say, no matter, I mean, it's so interesting that, doc, I can't move because I'm in pain, and
right.
Then it's,
right.
Well, you're in pain because you can't move, because you're not moving.
Yes, and, you know, it hurts when I do this, don't do that. But, you know, in actual fact, if you move, your pain will get better. And, you know, it's a battle. I mean, when we start out with people, especially people who have had, you know, chronic bouts of fibromyalgia, what they really want to do is they want to lie down. And it's very important. And we don't take no for an answer. So, you know, if you come to my treatment program, you don't get to lie down when it's group time. You got to go to group. And if it hurts when you're in group, then you lie down in the room on a, you know, one of the mats that's available, or you stand up and you walk around. But you got to sit through group. And people, what we find actually is that if we reinforce pain, there's more pain. If we reinforce function and sort of ignore the pain, yeah, I know you have a pain, but go to group, you know. Exercise, stretch, move, and the net effect is that you feel better about yourself.
I love
some people look at me as a hard heart, but that's my line is go to group, do it, get up, go, move. We do it compassionately. I don't want you to think we're that mean-spirited.
I mean, you're hurting anyway, so
right.
You're going right. to hurt whether you're laying down or you're going to hurt whether you're moving.
And
so
you'll be
move.
Better if you get up and move.
Wow, that's so important.
Yes.
Doctor, talk about TENS.
TENS units?
Mm-hmm.
Transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, easy for me to say. Basically, there's a variety of different kind of devices that can stimulate nerves and cause either muscle contraction or a distractibility of the nerve impulse. And we know very well that if there's a strong impulse going up a nerve, it can't feel the pain. So, you know, it's the basis of really some massage, acupuncture in some ways, medications like Bengay or capsaicin, which cause burning, anything that interferes with the signal, which TENS is capable of doing, diminishes pain. And there are certain kind of interferential devices where there's such a strong current that it actually increases the circulation to those muscles.
That's it's something that I've used, and it's pretty amazing how... I was thinking about this body-mind connection and what I notice after doing a treatment of that is the effect that it has on the brain.
Yes. Well, you're basically sending a different signal. You know, it's a healthier signal in a way. And it ends up having a bit of a blocking effect. I mean, it's the principle behind putting in a nerve stimulator in the back as well. And it's a nice idea. There are some problems with that. But it really is. I have a TENS unit, and I like the feeling of that very much. It gives me some relief.
The whole idea of our attitude, I mean, especially with people who have been in chronic pain for a long time, have not been successful.
Yeah.
Doc, I'm afraid... it'll never work for me. I can't do it.
Yeah.
How do you respond to those kinds of comments?
It's tough. I mean, because really, what you describe is very common in people with chronic pain. They tend to do a phenomenon called catastrophization. We use a variety of techniques that are based in thoughts and emotions. But one of them is to challenge the belief. Tell me what's going to happen. You know, what is it that your mind tells you? And these are actually called cognitive distortions. They're lies. You know, if this pain won't go away forever, I'm going to be crippled. Are you crippled? How do you know you're going to be crippled? Well, the doctor said so. What's a lie? We will not allow you to believe those lies without challenging them. So we really ask people to step up and challenge whatever it is that they've been told and whatever it is that they continue to tell themselves, you know, that sort of black and white thinking. One of the other things we do is I'll engage people in a conversation, and I run a group with all these pain clients, and I will say, okay, so if that's the truth, how are you going to make some positives in your life? What will your life, what meaning will you find in your life if the truth is that you're always going to be in pain and that nothing's going to work? The third thing, and probably the most powerful thing that happens at my center, is that people can't argue with the people that are getting better. You know, the people that came in with more pain and worse conditions and higher doses of medications, who 3 weeks out are doing really well, and they're out power walking when they couldn't walk without a cane. I have a cane collection at work. I have a number of canes that people have left with me. So it really is challenging those firmly entrenched beliefs and not allowing people to walk around sort of with sustaining behaviors towards those beliefs. In a nutshell, that's kind of the way in which we attack these beliefs.
KFAI waxaa maalgelisa mashruuca Minnesota Budget Project. Qoysaska ku nool Minnesota ee u qalma waxay u heli karaan ilaa $1,750 ilmo kasta, taasoo ay ugu waxan tahay xayirta caruurta ee uu gobolku bixiyo. Waxaad booqan kartaa minnesotataxcredits.org si aad wax badan uga ogaato CTC iyo kreditka kiraystaha Minnesota.
We're talking about pain, chronic pain, this evening on Health Notes. Dr. Mel Paul's new book, A Day Without Pain. You know, you talk about faith and spirituality in this book, and certainly when people think about meditation, it's a form of faith. What is the link in terms of our faith and spirituality to your work?
It's absolutely crucial. I mean, we look at four points of balance: the physical, mental, emotional, and the fourth is spiritual. And without paying attention to all four of those areas and ongoingly paying attention, the boat ends up getting missed. Now, some people hear spirituality and they think religion, and they get very defensive and are not interested in the religious aspects of life, or, you know, they've had bad experience. It's not about religion. Spirituality is really about something other than me. And if it's the force of nature, or if it's God, or if it's higher power, or if it's other people, or, you know, 100 other variants, it really doesn't matter. There's no right way in our program to be spiritual. But part of the way in which people get sick is they focus only on themselves. My pain, my life is about my pain, and they don't have a life. So moving beyond that, and actually we see people truly finding meaning in the pain. And sometimes that's really just helping other people who have the same condition. I mean, it's the same principle that is sort of crucial to any, I think, spiritual movement, but you know, 12-step programs are a good example of that, and we believe very strongly in the 12-step programs. It's really about finding something other than me to think about.
You talked earlier about at your center that you have people do a 40-minute meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you by chance have that available for others to...
It's a good question. I don't... we haven't produced anything ourselves, but I will refer you to John Kabat-Zinn, Kabot-Zinn. He is a psychologist from University of Massachusetts who is a meditator, and he has a CD that's readily available in, I'm sure, any bookstore online, and it has the version of the meditation is called Body Scan, and it's a process of really almost like a CAT scan, just sort of sorting through the mind and noticing spot by spot what's there, and not really working hard to change what's there, just noticing it and using the breath to work with whatever experience somebody is having. So John Kabat-Zinn, Body Scan, is the best reference. But I would also refer people, I mean, you're up in Minneapolis, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's probably hundreds of meditation groups in your community. I used to live in Minneapolis for 3 years, so I mean, it's a very connected place, both to 12-step programs and spiritual resources. So I would defy anybody to not be able to meet up with a meditation group and be able to practice these techniques.
So I'm wondering about practices like Qigong and
mm-hmm.
Tai Chi.
Yes. We're lucky enough to have a trained Qigong instructor, and it's a form of Tai Chi. It's body, mind, and spirit, all about the breath. Yoga is another example. It's really probably best if you can find somebody who's teaching these techniques and sign up for a course. It can't be prohibitively expensive, but there's a lot of resources, whether it's CDs or DVD videos of the techniques. The power of the group is really something. So, you know, seeking out some movement-related activity that involves the breath is really the fundamental underpinning of either Qigong or yoga and many other practices.
Is there something even more powerful about doing this work with a group of people?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it's, you know, the underpinning of spirituality. It's something other than me. I mean, I believe that there's a force between people, and that energy force, when you're in a group with a like-minded purpose, you know, whether it's praying or exercising or you know, talking, it's very powerful. What we find that happens in groups is that I can do my work while you're doing your work. I don't even have to speak. I don't even have to move. I can just sort of absorb some of the energy. So I think the really the phenomenon of chronic pain isolates people, and diffusing that isolation by being a part of a group is very powerful.
Powerful conversation, Dr. Paul. We've been talking about Dr. Mel Paul's new book, A Day Without Pain. The solution to chronic pain is within you. Thank you so much for this book and this conversation. You're just amazing. I thank you so much.
Thank you. Who really amazing is the people who have taught me this lesson, which is my patients. I've learned more in the last 5 years since I started doing this work than I have in my entire career.
That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much, Doctor.
You're welcome. I would just say that I do have a blog, and the book would be available through that. It's adaywithoutpain.com, where I talk about a lot of these topics in a little more detail.
Oh, fantastic. I'm very happy to hear that. I will absolutely be checking out your blog myself.
Okay.
Thank
Good
you,
deal.
Sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Do you have chronic pain? Do you know what chronic pain is? Do you know what to do about chronic pain? Chronic pain is generally defined as pain lasting 6 months or more. Subacute pain is pain lasting from 1 to 6 months. Acute pain is generally described as pain of 30 days duration or less. It is estimated between 70 and 116 million Americans suffer from chronic pain. Chronic pain is known to lead to depression, anxiety, and lack of activity. Medications for chronic pain can lead to illness, death, and addiction. There are, however, alternatives to medication for chronic pain sufferers, from chiropractic to diet and exercise to meditation. There are a lot of ways to help reduce, control, or eliminate chronic pain. Researchers from the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center wrote in the journal Archives of Internal Medicine that acupuncture has an effect at reducing chronic pain. This conclusion was deduced by analyzing data from 29 different randomized controlled human studies. The authors of this article wrote that they found acupuncture to be superior to both no acupuncture control and sham acupuncture for the treatment of chronic pain. They also stated, "Our results from individual patient data meta-analysis of nearly 18,000 randomized patients in high-quality randomized controlled trials provide the most robust evidence to date that acupuncture is a reasonable referral option for patients with chronic pain." In the same journal, Andrew Evans, MD, wrote, "At least in the case of acupuncture, Vickers et al. Have provided some robust evidence that acupuncture seems to provide modest benefits over usual care for patients with diverse sources of chronic pain." So what is acupuncture? Acupuncture started in China thousands of years ago to treat all ailments. The basis is that we have energy called qi that courses through our body in channels called meridians. The qi should be flowing freely in these channels to provide life energy needed to allow our organs and body to work. If there is a blockage, often called stagnation, in these channels, it can lead to illness. Acupuncturists use thin wire needles to stimulate the flow of energy to restore normal patterns and health. For those afraid of needles, you can relax. Acupuncture needles are nothing like a regular needle used to draw blood or give injections, which are razor sharp, have a beveled tip, and a hole to either put things in your body or take things out. Insertion of acupuncture needles can feel like nothing at all, or like a quick bug bite, having no lasting painful effects. In the modern Western world, it is not exactly understood how this mechanism of pain relief works in scientific principle. However, there is a growing body of evidence that acupuncture does indeed work in many cases, especially with musculoskeletal and chronic pain. As far as my two cents, I use acupuncture regularly in my office and see wonderful results with acute, subacute, and chronic pain, especially if a patient has scar tissue due to injuries such as whiplash, surgery, or broken bones that have healed. As far as how it works, there is a lot of great physiological and neurological hypotheses out there that make a lot of sense on how it stops pain and brings health and energy to people. The bottom line, if acupuncture has worked for people for over 3,000 years, I don't need to understand exactly how it works, but just that oftentimes, acupuncture simply works. This has been a Health Note by Dr. Jonathan Arnold of Arnold Chiropractic and Acupuncture.
In the infinity of life where I am, all is perfect, whole, and complete. The past has no power over me. Because I am willing to learn and to change, I see the past as necessary to bring me to where I am today. I am willing to begin where I am right now, to clean the rooms of my mental house. I know it doesn't matter where I start, so I now begin with the smallest and the easiest rooms, and in that way I will see results quickly. I am thrilled to be in the middle of this adventure, for I know I will never go through this particular experience again. I am willing to set myself free. All is well in my world. In the infinity of life where I am, all is perfect, whole, and complete. I am one with the power that created me. I have within me all the ingredients for success. I now allow the success formula to flow through me and manifest in my world. Whatever I am guided to do will be a success. I learn from every experience. I go from success to success, from glory to glory. My pathway is a series of stepping stones to ever greater successes. All is well in my world. In the infinity of life where I am, all is perfect, whole, and complete. I am one with the power that created me. I am totally open and receptive to the abundant flow of prosperity that the universe offers. All my needs and desires are met before I even ask. I am divinely guided and protected, and I make choices that are beneficial for me. I rejoice in others' successes, knowing that there is plenty for us all. I am constantly increasing my conscious awareness of abundance, and this reflects in a constantly increasing income. My good comes from everywhere and everyone. All is well in my world. In the infinity of life where I am, all is perfect, whole, and complete. I recognize my body as a good friend. Each cell in my body has divine intelligence. I listen to what it tells me, and I know that its advice is valid. I am always safe and divinely protected and guided. I choose to be healthy and free. All is well in my world. Deep at the center of my being, there is an infinite well of love. I now allow this love to flow to the surface. It fills my heart, my body, my mind, my consciousness, my very being, and radiates out from me in all directions and returns to me multiplied. The more love I use and give, the more I have to give. The supply is endless. The use of love makes me feel good. It is an expression of my inner joy. I love myself, therefore, I take loving care of my body. I lovingly feed it nourishing foods and beverages. I lovingly groom it and dress it. And my body lovingly responds to me with vibrant health and energy. I love myself, therefore, I provide for myself a comfortable home, one that fills my needs and is a pleasure to be in. I fill the rooms with the vibration of love so that all who enter, myself included, will feel this love and be nourished by it. I love myself, therefore, I work at a job that I truly enjoy doing, one that uses my creative talents and abilities, working with and for people that I love and that love me, and earning a good income. I love myself, therefore, I behave and think in a loving way to all people, for I know that that which I give out returns to me multiplied. I only attract loving people in my world, for they are a mirror of what I am. I love myself, therefore, I forgive and totally release the past and all past experiences, and I am free. I love myself, therefore, I love totally in the now, experiencing each moment as good and knowing that my future is bright and joyous and secure, for I am a beloved child of the universe, and the universe lovingly takes care of me now and forevermore. And so it is.
See the little brown girl, she's as old as me. She looks just like chocolate. Oh, mommy, can't you see? We are both in first grade. She sits next to me. I took care of her mom when she skinned her knee. She sang a song so pretty on the jungle gym. When Jimmy tried to hurt her, I punched him in the chin. Mom, can she come over to play dolls with me? We could have such fun, Mom. Oh, Mom, what'd you say?
Why not? Why not? Oh.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at